Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. I just want to make this really clear, something that yesterday everybody was celebrating that Trump lost about DACA at the Supreme Court. There were two arguments being made in front of the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court. The first was a 14th Amendment equal protection argument that basically, because Donald Trump was specifically going after a group that was largely Hispanic, probably 99%, but, you know, largely Hispanic, that he was racially motivated. And this was a violation of the 14th Amendment passed after the Civil War that said you can't basically go after anybody because of their race. So that was one argument. The second argument was he didn't fill out the paperwork right. The stuff that he did to reverse President Obama's executive order that created the deferred arrival program, you know, this DACA program, the Dreamers program, that Trump didn't fill out the paperwork right, and therefore he couldn't end the program. John Roberts, who was hailed as some sort of conquering hero yesterday, and I pointed this out, but I just, you know, now's the time to emphasize it. John Roberts said, we're not even going to talk about the racial aspect of this. Now, this is the same John Roberts who, in his 2013 decision, Shelby County decision, gutting the Voting Rights Act, said that there's no more racial discrimination in the United States. We've got a black president right now. Everything's fine. We don't have to keep an eye on Texas or Florida or Georgia anymore. You know, they're not going to do anything to racially discriminate. Everything's good. So he said that in the Shelby County case in 2013. And the result, of course, is that within hours of that Supreme Court decision back in 2013, you had Georgia, South Carolina, Texas, states that historically have disenfranchised largely African Americans, but, you know, also they also will go after Hispanics and Asians given the opportunity, and even women and even poor neighborhoods. Immediately, they were shutting down voting stations, throwing people off voting rolls, all this stuff that they had to pre-clear. So anyhow, John Roberts said, we're not going to talk about the racial aspect, which means that the only way Trump lost at the Supreme Court yesterday was that they filled out the paperwork wrong to end DACA. And as I said yesterday, don't celebrate this too soon, because all Trump has to do is refile the paperwork. Well, here we go. He tweeted this morning, the Supreme Court asked us to resubmit on DACA. Nothing was lost or won. They punted, much like in a football game, where hopefully they would stand for our great American flag, taking a shot at Colin Kaepernick here. And of course, it was never about the flag. It was about police violence and the national anthem. Trump continues in his asinine tweet, we will be submitting enhanced papers shortly in order to properly fulfill the Supreme Court's ruling. So whether he can pull this off before, you know, January 20th, time will tell. I'm not holding my breath. Kino in Lakeland, Florida. Hey, Kino. How's our moose herder Republican doing?
Hey, Yes, thank you for your program and Free Speech TV. Tom, I hope some of the Biden campaign people listen to your program. I want to make a complaint against the Biden campaign. A couple of weeks ago, I talked to Ro Khanna, and since I don't have a computer, I can't see computer screens. Ro Khanna said, get a friend to look up on the website. I got a friend to look up, and there's no way to contact the Biden campaign other than on the computer, and I don't have an email. There was no phone number. There was no address, and even it said any letters will be sent will be not opened. So that's a problem there. Now, I tried to call my county, Democratic County organization 5 times. I've left messages on the voicemail that I'm a Republican, and I had a letter to the editor in my local paper, the Lakeland Florida Ledger, June 4th. I had a lead letter to the editor saying, announcing to the world I'm a Republican, going to back Biden. I want to get that to the Biden Corporation people and let them know, but my county Democratic people don't get back with me. There's no way to communicate by telephone or letter. So hopefully some people will be listening. I want to do street theater for Biden. Get out and stand on a
street
corner.
Okay, Keno, here's what you do. Here's what you do. Call Congressman Khanna's office.
Okay. Okay.
And tell him what you just told me. Tell him that you talked to him on the air, that he suggested this, that you tried it, it didn't work, and you'd like them to help wire you into your local Democratic Party. I'm sure that they'd be glad to make that happen.
I will surely do that. Thank you, Tom.
Okay. Good luck, Keno. Thanks a lot for the call. Catherine in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Hey, Catherine.
Hi. I'm proposing that we engage the 25th Amendment to the Constitution because this man is clearly unfit to be president, and he has a form of mental illness called sociopath. His fascist behavior certainly would qualify him.
I agree with your diagnosis, Catherine. The problem with the 25th Amendment is that it has to be initiated by the vice president, and it requires a majority vote of the cabinet. And the cabinet, these guys are all getting rich with Donald Trump. I mean, you know, you've got just a whole bunch of grifters. You got Elaine Chao, who's in charge of transportation, and her family owns she's a multimillionaire. She's, Mitch McConnell's wife. Her family's worth hundreds of millions of dollars. They own a shipping business, and she's shoveling money to her own company. You've got Betsy DeVos, who's a billionaire and the Amway billionaire, and for years and years and years, she's been trying to destroy public schools. She has succeeded in Michigan in privatizing half the schools in that state, and she is taking money away from public schools all over the country and giving it to for-profit and religious schools. You got Wilbur Ross, who said he was a billionaire. Forbes busted him. He's not. He's only worth about $800 million. And Forbes ran an article calling him a grifter and saying that, you know, he was involved in all these shady deals. He's our Secretary of Commerce. You've got, you know, the guy who runs the EPA is a former coal lobbyist. The guy who runs Interior is a former oil lobbyist. Mark Esper, the Secretary of Defense, a former defense lobbyist. The cabinet is getting rich, or in the case of Betsy DeVos, doing, you know, fulfilling their lifelong dreams, and they are not going to vote Trump out.
Right.
And of course, Mike Pence, there's no way that he's going to call a cabinet together and propose removing Donald Trump from office. So I understand your concern, but sadly, that can't be you. It's not going to happen.
I'm still in favor of a social movement to propose it, even if it isn't possible to make it happen, that at least Trump knows that people are considering this or wishing for this.
Well, I think we did that with the impeachment. I mean, he has been impeached. He just hasn't been removed from office. But I get your point, and I honor it, and I agree with it. Ronnie in New Berlin, Wisconsin. Hey, Ronnie, what's on your mind today?
One of the phrases that I've heard a lot kind of in the last, well, at least 3 years, is, but especially recently, when you say fascism arrives draped in the flag and holding a Bible, I'm curious as to who said that and what was the historical background going on at the time.
I believe it was Sinclair Lewis in the mid 20s or maybe early 30s in a book called It Can't Happen Here, in which Buzz Winthrop, if I'm remembering who's who. He had a character who was a newspaper editor in Vermont, and a right-wing populist was elected president on a theme of making America great again and Christianity. And that president then begins cracking down on newspapers after referring to them as the enemy of the people, begins shutting down newspapers. And Winthrop, as I recall, was the newspaper editor. He flees to Canada and basically leads the resistance against this American president. I'm not sure that that phrase comes from the book. Probably one of our listeners knows better than me, or it could be, it's something you could just plug into DuckDuckGo and see. I believe, though, that that's a comment that he made. But it may be somebody else. It might have been H.L. Mencken, you know, or one or somebody else from that era. But it was the first couple decades of the 20th century is where it came from, Ronnie.
That's shocking how it is so representative of today, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it really is. It really is, and it's kind of grim. Mallory in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Mallory, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I was just wondering if, let's say, best case scenario, Biden wins, Trump goes off and does his news organization or whatever. How do we communicate with the believers, the true believers who, you know, I don't even know how to talk. I have family members and I don't even know how to talk to them, how to explain facts to them.
Yeah. We have a real serious problem with our media, Mallory, and slowly some of the corporate media is grudgingly being dragged into the 21st century. And, you know, frankly, excesses of the Trump administration, I think, have provoked a lot of that. But there is progressive media out there that you would want to expose them to and tell them about. I mean, you know, you're listening to this show on X-Ray FM. There's Free Speech TV. There's YouTube. There are ways to share information with people.
And educate
yourself as well as you can.
Well, yeah, but I also feel like they're so adverse to facts, to logic and everything, that it's like, is there an emotional way to get them to understand?
Good question. And I don't have an easy answer. I think repeatedly pointing out that the position of the Democratic Party has been, you know, since the New Deal, since the 1930s, the position of the Democratic Party has been the position of working people. Now, granted, in the 30s and 40s and 50s, it was largely white working people. Since the 60s, it's been all working people. But the position of the Democratic Party has been, by and large, to stand for working people and families. And the position of the Republican Party has been, clearly, since the 1920s, when the last of the progressive Republicans were flushed out of the system with Teddy Roosevelt and Taft, has been to be here of, by, and for the big corporations and the billionaires, the very, very rich. And to say to people, you know, provide me with an example of something that contradicts that. I've been doing this show for 16 years, Mallory. And we've been running a contest for a couple of years there. I ran it, like, you know, real formally. We made a big deal about it.
I know.
The show element. If you can name one piece of legislation introduced since Ronald Reagan became president that was introduced by a majority of Republicans, that was passed with a majority of Republicans, that principally benefited the working class or the poor in the United States, you win an autographed copy of one of my books. And nobody, to the best of my recollection, has ever won that contest. Now, you know, you can just pick any random piece of legislation the Democrats propose, and it fits that criteria.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom. And thanks for all the work that you do. I have enjoyed that contest because I have never heard anybody contradict you. Thank you, Tom.
Yeah. And that's, you know, and that's the question to ask your friends or your relatives who say that they're Republicans. OK, great. What has the Republican Party done for you? Oh, well, they gave me a tax cut. Yeah, but 85% of that tax cut went for the top 1%. Give me something the Republicans have done where the majority of it, more than 51% of it, even, you know, just a small majority, actually went for working people or the average person or poor people, for that matter, even more importantly. So Mallory, spot on. Thank you very much for the call, and good luck in waking up friends, neighbors, relatives, coworkers. I mean, I think that's part of my job, is to help you win what we used to refer to as the water cooler wars. Not so many water coolers anymore, but you know what I'm talking about. So over on Democratic Underground, Matthew G. is writing, there are four kinds of Trump supporters. I think this is pretty spot on. And I'm wondering if you have any that you can add to this. Matthew writes that type one, there are the affluent cynics. These would be, you know, white Trump supporters. They're saying, you know, I vote my wallet. I want my tax cut. I like the fact that the stock market and my 401k are going up. I don't care about any of that other stuff. I just look at the economy and the money. Number one. Number two, you've got the white racists, or the, you know, many of them don't even think of themselves as racist. In fact, they consider themselves the paragons of anti-racism because they're asking questions like, why don't we have a National Association for White People, an NAAWP, or, well, shouldn't there be a White History Month? Is it racist to love my Southern ancestry? These kinds of questions, obviously I've had people call into this program and say these kinds of things. They belie a deeply seated, deeply rooted, soft form of racism. I'm grasping for a word here. It's not unconscious racism. I think there's a certain level of consciousness to it. But, you know, these mean liberals are always calling me racist, as Matthew G. writes. So that's group number two, the white identity people who want to pass. Group number three, the religious fundamentalists. Basically, if you're going to criminalize abortion so that we can keep women, you know, barefoot and pregnant and in the kitchen, I'm with you. That's their shtick. The end of the world is coming, and you guys are going to bring it about, so it's fine with me, you know, blah-de-blah. I mean, you've got these religious, bizarre religious notions. And then number four, stupid people. And he says, I'm not talking about people with low IQs necessarily, just, you know, poorly informed people who believe stuff that is just crazy. You know, that Bill Gates invented the coronavirus and now he wants to vaccinate everybody and put microchips in us so he can track us. And Microsoft is in on it, right? I mean, that's actually a serious conspiracy theory that you will find all over the right-wing sites on the internet. So, affluent cynics, number one. Number two, white identity types. Number three, religious fundamentalists. Number four, stupid people. Who would you add to Matthew G's list? I think that's pretty much it. I would add at number five, corporate toady Republicans. This would be more the elected officials and those who support them, I suppose, who want to continue to be able to loot the American middle class and enrich the American billionaire class, and the American multinational corporate class. Lawrence in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Lawrence, what's on your mind?
We need to add to that list the black Trump supporter. So, of these supporters, you have people like Kanye West,
both of them?
Diamond. Oh, but there's another one. Her name is Candace Owens. So, all together, we have three. Mm. So, The important thing about that is that these guys are a joke, but they are exhibiting a self-preservation ideology that started back in slavery days, when your success or your very life depended on your white overseer or your slave master. So any real success that you had was sanctioned by that slave master, or after slavery we had Jim Crow. After Jim Crow we had discrimination in housing and education and everywhere else. Any success that a black person has was sanctioned by a white person. So therefore, if you can't became too successful, your city would be burned down like they did in Tulsa, or you would be denied ownership or something, like Jay-Z was denied ownership of a football team. So they're confusing Kanye West, who's another subcategory actually, but Diamond and Silk and Candace Owens, they are confusing their real success with that sanctioned by the white man.
Yeah, no, it really is. It's hypocrisy writ large. You're absolutely right. Gary in Detroit. Hey, Gary, what's up?
I just wanted to know, what exactly is Antifa? Is it actually an actual thing? Is there a leadership structure? I mean, what is that?
Antifa is a contraction for two words, anti-fascist. And the anti-fascist movement has emerged in the last few years. Some anti-fascists started referring to themselves as Antifa. I would say the first anti-fascist movement, the first really serious anti-fascist movement in the United States was the mobilization of our army after we were bombed at Pearl Harbor and fighting a world war against fascists in Germany and fascists in Japan and fascists in Italy and Spain as well. And we won that war. Now we've got a new generation of fascists coming up. They call themselves the Proud Boys, the Boogaloo Boys, and all these other things, and Republicans to a large extent. And the anti-fascist movement is saying no to fascism. To say that Antifa is a them is like saying conservative is a them or liberal is a them. You know, there's no, you can't address a letter Antifa, Washington, D.C., and it's not going to go anywhere. Just like if you addressed a letter conservatives, Washington, D.C., it wouldn't go anywhere. So, makes sense, Gary?
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. Good to hear from you. Hector in Chicago. Hey, Hector, what's up?
Where's the petition to oust the government?
It's called an election. If that's what you're talking about. If you want to change the leadership, you do that in November.
Tom, we're equal in power to the government, aren't we? One does equal two, doesn't it? I mean, the Constitution doesn't say that. We the people equal in power to the government?
No, what the Constitution... We the people give certain powers to the government. We restrain certain powers from the government. And we elect. I mean, right. this is not a pure democracy. This is a representative democracy. We elect people to represent us, not to rule over us, but to represent us.
Donald Trump didn't get that memo,
but
there's a call out for the people to oust the government. And
no, I don't know of any call like that, Hector. The call that I'm hearing is to oust particular politicians. Well, you know, you could argue that Trump is trying to deconstruct the administrative state. He's trying to take apart America. He's taking apart the institutions,
the government, right?
The federal institutions. Right. But there was no mandate for that, unless you count, you know, the billionaires who helped put Trump in office or foreign governments that don't like our form of government that helped put Trump in office. Ramon in San Francisco. Hey, Ramon, what's on your mind today?
Tom, you're smart. I love you. Yeah. Listen, I was reading the New York Times on the weekend on Saturday and talked about this General Mark Milley. And this guy is a good hope for us. This morning, he apologized for being in the picture show with Trump.
Which is a big deal.
It is indeed, because in that way, we know that we're not alone. I thought that this country was heading for dictatorships, like in my country, El Salvador, when I was there a long time ago. But now I realize that there are good people still in America, that we believe in the system. We haven't destroyed it yet. And the best hope is November. We all have to go there. And this guy is going to be walked out like Biden said this morning. He's going to be walked out of the White House with his score. Our security, and this has to be
we don't have to go to the bad road.
This is the right way we're going, and I'm very happy that this general took that stand. I mean, it's amazing. I love it. Okay, that's all.
Are there any, Ramon, did you say you're from El Salvador originally?
Yes, I am.
Are there any lessons? We just have a minute until we're going to hit a break, Ramon. But are there any lessons from what your country went through for all the rest of us, things to look out for?
Because when the military goes blind following a leader like Trump, all you have to do is repression. There is no work, and they cheat in the elections. All you have to do is a super revolution. And we don't want to go that way. We don't have to. Right. We still have to save this country. We're on time. Don't let it go off our hands.
So you see Mark Milley and Mark Esper, General Milley and General Esper, or Defense Secretary Esper, by pushing back against Trump as preventing tyranny here in the United States. That's a good thing. I just hope that they don't resign and Trump doesn't replace them with toadies, you know, like
Bill
Barr.
No, there are many people behind them who believe what they're saying. Yeah, there are many people in the army right now that they believe in us. Believe me, we believe in democracy.
Let's hope so. Okay, Ramon, thank you very much. You know, I see what he did to the Justice Department. I see what he did with the State Department by putting another authoritarian in there. You know, Mike Pompeo, who was an old toady of the Koch brothers. Anyway, we'll see. We'll see.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Ella Jones was just elected the first black mayor of Ferguson, Missouri. Some good stuff. Good stuff. Oh, this is funny. Hunter is writing over at Daily Coast. Donald Trump claimed he didn't live in Florida on his own voter registration form. He writes, what a dumbass. The Washington Post is now reporting that Trump originally tried to register to vote in Florida using, wait for it, an out-of-state address. He claimed his legal address was 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Well, if that's your legal address, that's where you have to vote, right? Oh, man. It just gets weirder and weirder. Patrick in Long Island, New York. Hey, Patrick, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, you know, I'm reminded of the saying that goes somewhat of, if you live long enough, you'll see history repeat itself. And I heard you discussing briefly a couple of days ago about Trump emulating Nixon and using Nixon's playbook, you know. And also to tag onto that, you're watching the old shows and being nostalgic for, you know, a much more civilized nation. And, you know, of all the people that emulate, Trump chooses Nixon. And this is like a flashback of the 60s for me, you know, when you had cities on fire. Yeah, you had cities on fire. And there's a sad common theme is that I recall when Nixon got the hard hats to beat up the hippies, because Nixon didn't care for the hippies at all. But the same thing is still happening to the blacks, to the African American, to the people who are perceived to be someone ruining this country, and they have been for the last 240 years. When is this ever going to change? When is this, you know, not going to be a common theme that one group of individuals is the whippy boy, pardon the pun, for, you know, white people, quite frankly, who are behind their gated communities and, you know, not coming out of the shadows? It's just, it's if you want to be nostalgic, to have the worst part of the 60s come back. Only thing I could say that was good was I recall the photographic image of, I guess, a college-age girl putting a flower in a National Guardsman in his rifle, in the end of the barrel of his rifle.
I remember that.
But, you know, I was talking to somebody just earlier today who was about in their mid-30s, and I said to him, we got through it then, you know, with the burning and the protests, and it used to be you go to a protest to meet a date, you know, it was, where's the protest going to be today? You know, and that we will get through it, and it may be ugly, but to hang in there, do your best, and stay spiritual and stay strong.
You know, we did end the war, but we didn't end racial discrimination in this country, and we didn't end police killings of African Americans, and we didn't end, you know, police brutality more generally, and all those things. We've got a big lift, Patrick, and we've got to do it. We've got to do it. And police reforms, among other reforms across our culture, have to come out of what's going on right now. Rose in Chicago. Hey, Rose, what's on your mind today?
Do you think that Trump's solid voting block of farmers will stick with him during and even after this pandemic like they did back, even when many of them were facing bankruptcy and even losing their farms during his stupid trade wars? I mean, it was unbelievable back then. Many of them that were interviewed said they would vote for him again when they were losing their farms. Do you think they'll stick with him this time?
Probably, Rose. The factor, the variable that's always missing from these equations when they're discussed in the media is the power of Fox News and right-wing hate radio, the ability to basically create a cult around grievance, you know, grievance about black people. You know, Trump is refusing to hang Obama's new picture in the White House. I mean, it may go up on the wall someplace, but traditionally there's a ceremony where they do it. He's refusing to do that, our first black president. It's just like this largely racialized grievance that they sell on right-wing hate radio and on Fox News is powerful stuff. Sure, go for it.
Just because I don't have cable or satellite TV. I know it's hard to believe. I've never really seen Fox News. I guess I'm one of the lucky ones, maybe. So I wanted to ask you maybe about that. Do the Trump followers that watch only that, do they not even hear stories or see any of the images of the ventilators or the refrigerated trucks being used as temporary morgues, or do they see it and just blow them off as fake? I mean, I don't, like I said, I've never seen it, so was it just political pundits all day, or is there any quote?
It's a little bit of both, Rose. It's a little bit of both. It's mostly, you know, those kinds of stories are mostly completely missing over on Fox and on right-wing hate radio. And when they are shared, they're shared as the exceptions to the rule or as examples of, oh, it's just black people dying. And by the way, black people are dying disproportionately. Or it's just old people who are dying. And again, they are dying disproportionately. And so, you know, their spin on all this is you don't have to worry about this if you're white or if you're under 60, you know, you don't have to worry about it. But one of the things that's interesting about that is that Trump's support among people over 60 right now is collapsing. And I think it's collapsing largely because that is the message that they're trying to push out there. Rose, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. It's nice to hear from you. Rich in Cedro, Woolley, Washington. Hey, Rich, what's on your mind today?
I would call Republicanism, Reaganism, but especially now Trumpism, the politics of projection. Take, for example, Pelosi asked for X million dollars to help out the states, and the Republicans say, oh, you're just going to give that to all your rich friends. Well, that's what they would do, you know.
Yep.
The other question, actually, it was a question for Pocan earlier today, but is there a way that the House or the Congress can change the definition of small business from not based on number of employees, but more on, say, gross income or even payroll?
Well, Congress can do anything they want, you know, in making these definitions. I'm with you, though. I remember Louise and I back in the 80s or in the 90s. We owned a travel or an ad agency, excuse me, an advertising agency in Atlanta. We owned a travel agency before we sold that, and then we started an ad agency. And the ad agency had, I think, probably 13, 14 employees, something like that. We were a small business. We were large for small ad agencies. Most are 2 and 3 person shops, the small ones. So we were doing pretty good sized business. But I wanted to expand the company. I wanted to buy some equipment, actually. I wanted to buy some typesetting equipment that cost about $100,000. And so I went to my bank and I said, can I get a small business loan? And he says, no, you're too small. To be a small business, to be defined as a small business under the SBA, you have to have, and I forget what the criteria was, but I think it was something like 50 employees or something like that. You know, our company was just too small. And we had a gross income that was, well over $1 million a year, but it wasn't enough. So, you know, small businesses really are the heart and soul of this country, at least traditionally have been. And that's why I wrote this book on monopolies, which is coming out in a month and a half, The Hidden History of Monopoly, Who Stole the American Dream, or How Big Business, Destroyed the American Dream. It's an issue that we need to be addressing. And I agree with you that, redefining small businesses would be a good start. Karen in Abiquiu, New Mexico. I'm sure I'm mangling. Thank you. Okay, Abiquiu, what's up?
I have a question about the Insurrection Act and Posse Comitatus. Trump did threaten the use of the Insurrection Act, and I wondered if you would speak briefly to compare and contrast the Insurrection Act with Posse Comitatus.
Sure. Posse Comitatus specifically says that the military may not turn their guns on American people. I'm pretty sure it was passed in the 1870s after the Civil War, basically to say, never again will we have the army pointing guns at people. On the other hand, back in 1807, after there was some uprising back around that time, I forget which one it was, the Insurrection Act was passed, and that actually empowers governors to request of the federal government the assistance of the military to put down an insurrection within their state. This was happening during the Jefferson administration as the southern states were starting to break away from the idea of ending slavery in 1808, and which is what was written into the Constitution. It didn't actually say it would end slavery, it would just end the importation of enslaved persons. But at the time of the writing of the Constitution in 1787, there was a widespread belief that within a couple of generations, slavery would fade out, would die out. And so there was concern that you would see some insurrections around this issue, particularly coming out of the South. In 1807, they passed the Insurrection Act. My understanding of the Insurrection Act is, and I'm not an authority on it, is that it requires a governor to request the military presence. Whether Trump can invoke it all by himself without a governor, participating, he might be able to do that in the District of Columbia, which has no governor. But I don't think he can do that anywhere else. And frankly, I don't think he needs to invoke that act to militarize the District of Columbia, because, it's a federal district. He has ultimate authority over that. Did I answer your question?
I think you did. Thank you so very much.
Okay, you're welcome. Thank you very much for the call. Deborah in Columbia, Tennessee. Hey, Deborah, what's up?
You were speaking to someone earlier about the judges, and once they're in for good. I heard something a while back about the possibility of legislation being passed where these judges, maybe they wouldn't hold the seat that they were brought into, that even the Supreme Court, they might be able to take these lifelong judges and move them to places that they don't have quite the same power. And I was just curious if you had heard or knew anything about this.
With regard to the Supreme Court, that is not only possible, it's in the Constitution. It's Article 3, Section 2 of the Constitution, which gives Congress the power to regulate the Supreme Court. And in fact, Congress regulates the entire federal court system. And Elizabeth Warren has proposed term limiting Supreme Court justices. And because Article 3 provides for lifetime appointment of federal judges, you couldn't basically fire a federal judge or retire them. But what you could do is you could move a Supreme Court justice down to an appeals court or district court level. But that's the bottom, the bottom of the federal judge ring. The problem with doing that sort of thing, to the best of my knowledge, Deborah, is it's a question that I've never specifically researched, but I'm pretty sure I'm right about this. The problem with trying to do that with the judges that Mitch McConnell is putting in is that the vast majority of them are going in as these judges at the bottom rung. So there's no place lower to demote them to. And because the Constitution gives them a lifetime appointment, to the best of my knowledge, the only thing that you could do is impeach them. And you'd have to do that one by one individually. And you'd have to go through the process of articles of impeachment coming out of the House of Representatives, going to the Senate, and the judges being impeached. And that's only happened, I think, 3 times in the history of the United States. So it's pretty unlikely.
So we're screwed. But,
yeah, I think so. For another generation or two, this is, you know, this is McConnell and the you know, the Koch brothers and their billionaire buddies who funded the Federalist Society. This is their you know, sweet goodbye kiss to America,
right,
as we prepare to vote the Republicans out of office. Yep, Deborah, thank you for the call. Marty in Evergreen Park, Illinois. Hey, Marty, what's on your mind?
I was thinking, since we're amassing a group of labor workers, right, to go and do the census, right, you know, to go to the different houses and tally the census, I was thinking we can train those folks as well to maybe conduct COVID testing or coronavirus testing, since they're going to be like going door to door to door and stuff. And I thought it'd be a good use of our labor force, you know, to get to that testing numbers that we need to get to.
It's an interesting idea. I've heard people suggest that postal workers could do the same thing because they go door to door. The problem is that testing somebody for coronavirus is a medical procedure. When you stick that swab up somebody's nose, you know, about half the time they will sneeze fairly violently. And if they have the coronavirus, they will blow it all over you. And so you really want medical professionals or people who have been trained at least in that very narrow piece of medicine to be doing that. And also, the census workers, and I haven't heard any updates on what's going on with the census in quite a while. I don't know if the census workers are out there or not. I think it's been suspended, but I could be wrong. Not the entire census, but I mean, you know, for a couple of months. Louise and I got ours in the mail, and we just filled it out and mailed it back. But I think that they're really, really busy, as are postal workers. I think it's going to take a completely separate agency or group of people. And also, I think it would be very difficult to federalize that. I think it has to be done by the states. I suppose it's conceivable it could be federalized. I don't know. I'd have to look into the legality of that. But, you know, keep thinking, Marty. There's some, you know, a lot of great ideas here. Lori in Cashiers, North Carolina. Hey, Lori, what's on your mind today?
Earlier, you asked the question, why is Trump doing all this? And I think I know the answer. Every rich person's house and yacht that I have ever been on has had this little embroidered pillow that says, "The man who dies with the most wins."
Lori, I suspect that there's probably some deep truth in what you're saying. I think that, you know, he who dies with the most toys wins is the one I've seen most frequently. I've seen it as a bumper sticker. And you know, it's kind of classic libertarian ideology, but point well taken. Lori, thank you for the call. Kathy in Madison, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I'm a longtime labor journalist, and I'm getting very nervous about a trend going on in media to report all these horror stories about what people are going through working in dangerous situations, and yet they don't talk about a law that's been on the books since basically 1970 with the establishment of the Occupational Safety and Health Act, a subsequent regulation, all of which was affirmed by the Supreme Court in 1980. And the law basically is that workers have a right to refuse dangerous job assignments. Furthermore, they have a right to collect unemployment. Now, of course, there's certain standards that they have to meet. You can't say, "Ooh, I'm afraid, pay me." It doesn't work that way. But providing that certain things are followed, they have this right, and nobody is telling them that. There was a really disturbing New York Times post over the weekend about workers being fired for saying, "Wait a minute, I can't come back to work. You know, they've been laid off because of COVID. I can't come back to work. The job place is unsafe. The employers are firing them." States, inclusion with Trump's Labor Department, which is pushing out information to them, is cutting them off for unemployment. So they're putting people in a box of having to choose between going back to a dangerous job or staying home and starving. And I've written information about this. I actually got in touch with the New York Times reporter. I gave him information about stuff I've written. I really encouraged him to get on that and talk about people's rights. And luckily, I'm proud to say, he says he was looking for an idea to follow up, and supposedly he's going to do it. So I just hope more information about that gets pushed out, and I can send you links to more information for your website.
Damon in Las Vegas. Hey, Damon, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, Tom, I wanted to thank you for bringing up the deplorable, disgraceful situation with this Republican clown, Thomas Modley. The only reason this guy is acting Secretary of the Navy is he's an investment banker who gave a lot of money to Trump's presidential campaign. This guy and the president that put him in there could not carry the piss bucket of Captain and Commander Brett Crozier. There's a much bigger thing going on here than just this disgraceful situation where Modley flies 8,000 miles. And by the way, if anybody with the Democratic administration had done this, the Republicans like Rand Paul would be screaming about the cost. But he goes 8,000 miles not only to trash Crozier, but to trash the men and women that serve on the aircraft carrier who cheered Crozier when he walked off the carrier after he had been fired. But as I said, this goes much further. And I'd just like to read really quickly two-sentence paragraph from the New York Times. Like much of the Trump administration, what began as a seemingly straightforward challenge, the arrival of coronavirus on board a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier, has now engulfed the military, leading to far-reaching questions of undue command influence and the demoralization of young men and women who promised to protect the country. At its heart, this crisis aboard the Theodore Roosevelt has become a window into what matters and what does not in an administration where remaining on the right side of a mercurial, I would say bat crap crazy, mercurial president is valued above all else. If this guy gets reelected, you're going to see a situation where all of the people in the military are going to be required to sign a loyalty oath to the dear leader. This is endangering our national security. This is big stuff.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Russ. And Donald Trump doesn't care about the military, except that to the extent that he can use them as props for his reelection. Really, he doesn't care about anything or anyone except himself and his own political future. Bob in Naples, Florida. Hey, Bob, what's up?
History is not going to be kind to Trump and his administration, but they're shameless. They really don't care as long as they're in power. That's all that matters to them. When CBS asked a question to William Barr, the reporter asked him, is this going to be kind, meaning to him or his administration? And Bill Barr's response was, history will remember us as the winners. That's all that matters to them, as the winners. Right. And then he kind of laughed. I mean,
well, and Trump was once asked something like that, Bob, and he said, I'll be dead. I don't care. Or words to
yeah,
that
exactly. Effect. They're shameless, and their goal is they don't care, like, they cheat, they lie. I mean, whatever it takes. I mean, they're willing to throw their friends, and if they don't agree with them, under the bus. They don't care. All they care is money, power, and that's all that matters. Just like we study history, like Harding, Coolidge, Herbert Hoover, Hitler, Franco, and Mussolini, they were in power because they cheated, and that's all they care. They have to kill that. So be it, and that's their weapon of the choice. That's all that matters.
Yeah, I'm not sure that Hoover was in power because he cheated, but you know, I get your point, and that's absolutely what they're doing, and that's why Trump is screaming about Michigan sending out applications for absentee ballots, because he knows that if the majority of people vote, he's going to lose, and the bet that he's making right now is that in November, Republicans will be brave and fearless, and they'll go to the polling places, and Democrats are still going to be worried about getting COVID-19, particularly those people over 60 who are concerned about Medicare and Social Security, and they're not going to go out and vote, and so he's therefore going to win, because he's got a bunch of, you know, younger white yahoos who are going to vote, go and vote for him. So we'll see. We'll see, Bob. But I think you're right. I think, you know, your assessment that history is not going to be kind to them, spot on. Dave in Manhattan, New York. Hey, Dave, what's up?
You've spoken many times about how cynical Republicans are in that they don't necessarily believe, you know, what they project, you know, on online or on TV.
Sure.
And, you know, they are opportunists, and this is about being prominent, making money, et cetera. But I always wonder, behind the scenes, what are they saying? I mean, if I were a fly on the wall or a fellow traveler and I said, oh, God, can you believe, you know, what we're getting away with? Can you believe people are still believing all the nonsense we speak? spew, would, you know, what would, you know, would they say that? I mean, are they, you know, do they say, gee, I thought Trump was going to be bad, but I didn't think he was going to be this bad? Yeah, and or are they just, I can't believe they're as self-deluded and or as crazy as they might be, and that this is just, you know, it's just opportunism.
I, you know, David Stockman talked about that. He wrote a book basically apologizing for the time that he was Reagan's budget director.
That's right.
And yeah, and he made the point. I mean, you know, George Herbert Walker Bush knew that Reaganomics was BS. During the primary, he called it out. He said it was voodoo economics. He suggested, these weren't his exact words, but the implication or the import of them was that Ronald Reagan wanted to take America back to the roaring 20s, you know, the policies of Harding and Coolidge and Hoover, and those policies ended in disaster. Yes, they made rich people very, you know, fabulously rich. That's why it was called the roaring 20s, and they wiped out a lot of working class people. Wages, working class wages actually declined in the 1920s, while rich people got richer, which is exactly what's happened since 1981. And so Stockman called that out and said, yeah, these guys know what's real, and they're BSing you on behalf of their donors. It's all about power and money. And I think bet that that's still the case.
Yeah, and I think that's worse. I mean, you know, you can only blame somebody so much for genuinely believing something, no matter how nutty it is. But when they know it's not true and they pretend it is, I mean, that's just so destructive and objectionable.
It really is. It's hypocrisy writ large, Dave. You're absolutely right. Doug in Manistique, Michigan. Hey, Doug, what's on your mind today?
Isn't this a slow motion coup?
I think it is.
What's going on here with Trump? Yeah. Yeah,
and, I think it is. And the big question is going to be, you know, now that Mark Esper is backing away, I mean, you know, in order for a coup to be successful, you have to have the military. And now that you've got several well-respected military people speaking out, you know, the most obvious being our former Secretary of Defense, but now you've even got our current Secretary of Defense saying, hey, wait a minute, I have a little bit of hope, but I'm frankly very, very concerned about this.
Me too. You know, we can't let them keep getting away with this stuff, and I think there should be consequences, you know, trials whatever it takes, you know.
It appears that the consequence that we're going to have, Doug, is going to be on November 3rd when it's time to flush the, that word that starts with T. Dave in Federal Way, Washington. Hey, Dave, what's up?
You know, we're under occupation, and that pretty much hit the nail on the head, but I just wanted to add that I have been feeling this way since, you know, I was with David Petraeus in Iraq. Now, this was some years ago, okay? But my whole attitude changed when he said we are now crossing the Rubicon. Now, we can, you know, debate what General Petraeus actually meant. But crossing the Rubicon in ancient Roman history was to prevent their military from co-opting, you know, their legislative experience, okay? From co-opting the Republic. Because this sort of thing happens. I mean, there's no way to stop it, you see. You can legislate from gunpoint. You can legislate from sword point from back in the days of Rome. And I just wanted to add, as far as outside sources manipulating us, of course they are. Of course they are. Look, when the CIA embarked on a plan to help former Russian satellite countries convert their alphabet to a Romanized alphabet off of the Cyrillic, kind of started engaging in a culture war against Russia. All right. And Russia is fighting back. And look, I heard it the other day, and I obviously you're a very smart guy, but actually I fell for it before you. You had a guest on that said that evangelicals, you know, they validate their support for Trump by Isaiah 45. Okay. Now, I didn't even catch it right at first, and I should have because I'm an atheist. I was like, okay, Isaiah 45, Trump is number 45. They were talking about Cyrus. Cyrus was a goyim. He was not Hebrew. Okay. But he was anointed as a Messiah. Okay. But look, the most simple thing is Cyrus.
Actually, he was not anointed as a Messiah. Cyrus merely protected the Jews while they were in exile. But he was.
No, he did more than protect them.
But anyhow, back to you.
He, no, Well, he freed the slaves. He freed the Hebrew slaves, according to this tradition, okay? That's the simplest question, right? Now, you know, being manipulated has nothing to do with intelligence level. Even Albert Einstein can be manipulated, okay? What I'm saying is, if you ever find yourself going, thinking, like having a little internal dialogue, why did I not go to the simplest question first? Why did I not bring that up? You might want to start, trying to get ahead of that. All right. And I've heard several callers, like there was a caller you had. She was talking about we need to examine our own humanity first. I think that's what, you know, subconsciously she's trying to do. She's trying to get ahead of the manipulation. And this goes to another category of Trump voter. They're all over the world.
Dave, what's your bottom line here? We're going to hit a break in about
line,
a minute.
The bottom line is, war, the way we're using it, is just another tool for control and the way to get rid of democracy. I don't care what your personal feelings on it are.
Oh, it has been since Vietnam.
Yes, but you know, for instance, in Antarctica, China's building up right now in violation of the Antarctica Treaty. I love the environment. You love the environment, Tom. We cannot support Trump if he decides to use that as a predicate to war with China. We cannot trust Trump's motivation. He is being enabled as a dictatorial figure in America. All right. And all he really wants is power. He doesn't want power over China. He doesn't want to kick China out of Antarctica. Okay. He doesn't care about the environment. What he cares about is extending his authority, all right, and destroying the foundations of the Constitution. I'm sorry, I don't mean to be, you know, dramatic, but that's what he's doing. I mean, if you care about the foundations of the Constitution.
I agree. This is a scared little man who believes he can only be safe, and the problem is that there are many other scared little men in America, who believes that he can only be safe if he has absolute control over everything and everybody. And that is the, you know, typically authoritarian followers are scared people who want somebody to promise them safety and leadership. They're also scared people who believe that they can only feel safe when they control everything, when they've got everything locked down, and they use violence to do that. And we've seen that over and over in history, going all the way back to the Greek and Roman republics.
Well, when you talk about your walks along the river there in Oregon, it's very touching. It's very moving to me, okay? And believe me, I might be compelled to support Donald Trump in a confrontation with China over what they're doing in Antarctica. All I'm saying is we must seriously, at this point, we must question that. If we do not, we are going to forfeit our republic. That's all I'm saying. I want to get your take on Trump's commencement speech to West Point. They had the military panel on afterwards, okay? But they didn't talk about something I think me and you both agree on. All right, Trump reaffirmed and reiterated his Trump doctrine, okay, if you were listening closely, which is the United States Defense Forces, he uses them in an aggressive, retaliatory, unilateral, and disproportionate way. All right. And this has been, I've seen that a lot of Trump followers, you know, are using his name, Paul Whelan, perhaps, you know, who has just been sentenced to 16 years in prison in Russia for spying. There's no indication he was on the payroll of the United States government, but he dropped Trump's name. Okay. And so did Jordan Goudreau down in Venezuela. But anyways, I couldn't help but think of, and you know, I'm not trying to draw any comparisons to Nazi Germany, but I was thinking of a General Friedrich Paulus. He was promoted by Hitler to a field marshal of the Eastern armies, okay? And remember, his forces got encircled by the Russians in Stalingrad. And Paulus was not allowed to retreat, nor was he allowed to break through and get resupplied, okay? And this was all Hitler's mandate. I mean, Hitler was, you know, ordering him to stand his ground, for lack of a better word. Paulus surrendered. And all Hitler could do is lament that no German field marshal had ever been taken alive. They even said those orders promoting Paulus to field marshal were a suicide order by Hitler. Okay? And I got to thinking about this cult of toxic masculinity that I see Trump and Trump followers, they exhibit this. And I'm wondering if you have a take on, does it affect their decision-making and how dangerous it could ultimately be given the economic catastrophe that the world is facing?
Yeah. I don't have an easy answer for you, Dave. I do know that as people become economically insecure, they express their insecurity in ways like toxic masculinity, you know, trying to assert control and dominance over their immediate environment because they feel like they've completely lost control of the larger environment, like their workplace or their job or their fate or their future or their income or anything. But that's a much larger topic for another time. Thanks so much for being with us today. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. In the meantime, let your friends know where they can find good progressive media. Tell them about our program and others. Share the word, huh? Tag You're It. And be good to yourself and the people around you. Now is a really important time to have a little compassion.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.